We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Coast to Coast on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network or on YouTube for all you lovely YouTube viewers. Very much appreciate it. We got a lot to get into today. We got some headlines of the week, stuff that's happened around the W. Then we're going to talk, of course, about the WNBA Finals. And last but certainly not least, we're going to have our Player of the Week pick. I'm Karina Mustafa alongside Calvin Wetzel. Cal, you ready?
I am as ready as I can be getting off that jet-lagged flight back from Vegas. I got my vacation scruff still going on. See how long that lasts, but I'm good. Let's go.
Let's go. Okay, our headline of the week, it's actually two things, because when we recorded last week, WNBA expansion news broke after. But we'll start with the most recent piece of news, which is Teresa Weatherspoon being hired by the Chicago Sky as their next head coach. As reported by Annie Kosvile since, like, pretty much August, if I'm not mistaken. Like, she's been on this story for a long time. Liberty legend, assistant with the Pelicans. Now she gets that head coach job. I remember when the Liberty were searching for their head coach, I went on a podcast and I was like, Teaspoon is just, like, kind of, like, hanging out in New Orleans right now. Like, maybe they should take a look at her. Like, I feel like she would be a great pick. And I love that they hired Sandy. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I think that was a very good pick. But, like, it felt like nobody was talking about Teaspoon. So I think it's really cool that the Sky went ahead and did this. And also very important that it's separate from the GM role. But, Cal, what do you think of this hiring?
Yeah, I definitely agree that that separation is important. But, you know, obviously Teaspoon could hoop. Like, we all remember that shot that she hit. Yeah, they could use that some of that right now. Well, they got to be close enough to hit a half-court game winner, though. We'll get into that in a little bit. You know, I don't follow the NBA enough to know, you know, how she is as a coach. But I'm assuming she can coach pretty well, too. You got to ask the Pelicans people about that. Most importantly, to me, another Black woman, another former player. You don't have to go very far back in this league to a time when there were only four women coaches and they were all white. You really only have to go back to the bubble season in 2020 to get there. Now, you look up and down the league, there's 10 women coaches. Eric Thibault, Kerr Miller, the only men, and four of those are Black, and there's former players everywhere. I think that's a huge shift when you look across the landscape of the league. It's so important just to have, like, obviously representation. And also, who knows the players, the league, the game better than the people who played it? So you're starting to see former players, you know, Tanisha Wright, Noel Quinn. Obviously, the two coaches we got in the finals right now are former players. And now you're bringing in Teresa Weatherspoon. So it's a big deal, I think. And the last few years, that's just been the story across the league in terms of coaching hires to me, is this move towards Black women and towards people who played this game, which is, I think, crucial.
Yeah, I love it. Even just speaking a bit from the Pelican side too, like I know all those players like really respected Teaspoon. I think she brought a lot of energy, a lot of grit, and also just very smart overall. And I think the Pelicans are going to be sad to lose her, but I guess they would lose her at this point because of the way the seasons are now going to start to overlap. But no, she's an incredible asset and I'm very excited. I think this is a great move for this guy, especially, you know, moving forward in a post-championship, post-James Wade era, and just trying to kind of find their feet again with Ka leading the ship. So, yeah, that's pretty much the most recent news of the week. Now on to WNBA expansion, which are words that I kind of can't believe that I'm saying right now. Like, it feels like this has been a very long time coming. It's always the same conversation every year. Oh, we got these 10 cities on one list. We've narrowed it down to 10. Then we have 20, whatever, whatever. We've got at least one confirmation for the year 2025, which is in the Bay Area. The Warriors are, they bought another WNBA team, which is fantastic. That second team, however, it seems like it's going to be Portland, but from like what we've heard, it's not like super confirmed yet. But let's get to the Bay Area first. Where the W is expanding, Cal. Like, how do we feel about that?
Oh, great. I mean, we've been waiting for this day, right? It's finally here. And it's really cool that it's, you know, in a place too, where I think basketball has become so big because of what the Warriors have done. So I would like to think that they'll do pretty well right away, just in terms of attendance and things like that. I'm so fascinated in general by how the sort of expansion rules and the lottery and the draft and all of that is going to work. Because when you look at this team, I believe we said they're starting in 2025, right? Do I have that correct?
Yes.
So, yes. You know, we don't know this for sure. From some conversations I've had, it sounds like the 2025 draft might end up being as or more loaded than the 2024, just based on who stays and who doesn't with their COVID year in college with all these big names. But either way, there's definitely going to be some talent in it. So if these teams get the number one and number two picks, I mean, they're going to start out with someone really good right away. Even if not, if you just put them in the lottery somewhere and they end up getting third or fourth, there's going to be some talent there. And then how many players are teams going to get to protect? You know, last time they protected six when expansion happened in 2008. There was a time before that when multiple teams were added that they protected eight. So we'll see how many they're able to protect. I mean, if it's only five or six, I think you're going to have some decent players out there as well for these expansion drafts. So it wouldn't shock me. Like, these teams aren't going to go out and win a championship right away. I know Joe Lacob said first 5 years or whatever. I don't know about that, but I don't know if they're going to be last in the league right away either, based on, you know, how these depending on like how they allow these expansion teams to be built. So that's something that I'm really curious to see.
It's also funny. I saw somebody tweeted all the players that are from the Bay Area that are in the W, and that like Chelsea Gray is on that list. And so is Haley Jones. And like, I was like, that's so like, it's so cool to see those players. And also just see like the fans of the teams that those players are currently on just kind of be like, no, leave them alone. You're not taking them from us. So yeah, no, you're right. It'll be very interesting to see who gets protected and who doesn't, because I feel like it's just going to be so much chaos, which, you know, we're used to here in the WNBA space. But yeah, those are two. Oh, right. Before we move on, I just want to do a little spiel on Toronto not being that second team that was announced because they did pull out of their bid for a team. I know there's like, my DMs were like literally bombarded by people just asking me, why did that happen and what is going on, and tell me more about ownership. And I apologize.
Well, Karina, why did that happen? Tell me more about ownership.
I apologize if I didn't get back to you. It's just a very complicated mess that is happening in my city right now. I'll just put it like that. There's some politics things that are happening within said organization that are making it difficult to do things like this. I think it was a mistake to pull out, because here's the thing. If you're not ready by 2025, Sure. But I also, the reasons that were given, like there was one reason that they didn't want to give up, like Scotiabank Arena didn't want to give up concerts during the summer, which is just ridiculous because during the winter you have concerts, NBA and NHL all happening at the same time in that arena and you're able to balance it perfectly fine. So that already is like bad excuse. Like another, like, it's just, I put out a tweet. I thought I would be more eloquent with this. It's a lot of emotions, you know, because
let him know, Karina.
I put out a tweet that was just kind of trying to look at this in a rational way, where it's like, okay, they pulled out of their bid for 2025 or whatever. The CBA, like the opt-out deal, I think is like next year in November. And then you have the ESPN TV deal expiring in 2025. So there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of change that is set to happen in the next couple of years. And I feel like at that point, maybe see what's going on, how much more revenue the league is generating. And then maybe Toronto would like to get back into it. But that also means that you delay the start of this expansion team if it's ever happening. Because maybe the charter flight situation is just fixed in 2 years. And then what? Right. And then you're kind of just like kicking yourself saying, oh, I should have like done this earlier. Also, because I think the value was like the Warriors bought it for like $50 million or something like that. Like that value is only going to get higher and higher. So if your excuse is like not wanting to spend a lot of money or not having a lot of money, well, you kind of missed your chance on that because it's just going to continue to rise. So it's a very weird situation, a very interesting situation. I think overall, there's just this overarching theme of like not wanting to put enough resources in women's sports. And you need somebody who's going to be like that Warriors owner who's just like, we're winning a championship in the next 5 years. Like it's that, like as crazy as that sounds, like that is a mentality that you want from your ownership. If you're going to own a team, like you want somebody who's invested. I need Serena Williams' husband to just tell us what he's doing because he always tweets that he's going to go on this next big venture in women's sports, but then nothing happened. I thought it was W expansion related and I guess it wasn't. So Alexis, like, what's going on, bro? Like, just tell us. But yeah, no, I think there's a lot of missed opportunities here. And I'm hopeful that in the next couple of years that will change, but I don't know. For all the Toronto fans and like just people asking me like when the team is going to happen, I think this has set the timeline back even more, in my opinion.
Well, I just think, you know, as the WNBA community, we need a team in Toronto so we can get beat reporter Karina Mustafa, because that is that's what we all deserve. That would be a win for the league. So let's make it happen. Whoever can make it happen. I'm with you. I agree. But
well, thank you. I appreciate that. I didn't know where you were going with that. And I was like, oh, okay. That's very nice. But yeah, bring a team to Toronto, somebody. I don't have the money for it, but if I did, I would. But yeah. But
hey, if anyone wants overall, to sponsor this podcast, by the way, quick plug. Maybe yes, we can raise the money plug. For it.
Raise money from coast to coast. yeah, I wasn't getting through the first like 15 minutes of this without a pun. So there's the pun for the first half. But yeah, I think overall it's really good that the league is expanding. We've been waiting on this for a long time and I'm really excited to see what that expansion does look like. Portland was reported to be that second team, not fully confirmed yet, but it seems like that's the way that it's going to go. So that's two more West Coast teams, which is super cool. We're going to have to adjust our sleeping schedule around that. But it's fine. If you look at the map of like, I think there are like more East Coast teams. So it's not as like unbalanced as people really thought it out to be. But yes, that's the headlines of the week. Teaspoon Higher by the Sky, W expansion. And now we're going to move on to the main event, the WNBA Finals. We're in a very different position than we were last week when we previewed said WNBA Finals. First of all, Cal, how was game one in Vegas? Because you were there. Stewie's on the ground. and Stewie was on the ground. I don't know. I was trying to think of a pun, but how was it?
You got there. Yeah. It was great. It was fun. You know, I would have loved to see a close game as a neutral basketball fan, something we still haven't gotten yet somehow. And you can even
go back to the close half.
Honestly. Yeah, I got a close half. It was a great first half. It wasn't just close. It was wildly entertaining with Marine hitting those one-legged shots. I think both teams threw some haymakers. That got a great first half. And from an Aces perspective, you got a great game. But that being said, like, it was so fun being in the building, you know, close game or not, like, that place knows how to go hard. And that, I, you know, it's not like the acoustics and the obviously energy of just the people who are so charged up for the finals. And I don't know who their PA announcer is. I thought he's great. It's the first time I've ever been in there. I think the whole atmosphere was just like A plus. So good on Las Vegas. They know how to throw a party everywhere, basketball and otherwise. That was super fun being there. I would love to see at least one close game this season between these teams, because how have we not seen it yet? They played 5 times in the regular season. They played 2 times in the playoffs. Preseason game, which no one cares about, wasn't even within 2 possessions. So can we get at least one? I don't care who wins. I would just like to see one in game 3, one close game.
Yeah, I think, you know, with that, and I was kind of talking to one of my friends last night during the game about this too, that all the games have been blowouts, and it just feels like, not to simplify it, but whoever does better playing at a faster pace is the team that's coming out on top and just running away with the game. And right now, the Aces are winning that battle. And I think the Liberty very much would like to slow the game down going into game 3. But yeah, games 1 and 2, the Aces defeated the Liberty 99-82 in game 1, and then 104-76 in game 2. There's like a lot of things going on. I think the first thing is just this Aces team is so good, and they are reaching their potential of like, you cannot stop them no matter what you do. Cause like, what do you do? That first game was more competitive in the first half, like we just talked about, but then that second game, like the Liberty, they tried, like by halftime, they got it to within single digits. And it seemed like we might get a closer game, but the Aces just were kind of like, no, we're not doing this. We are not doing this at all. So like, what do you do if you're the Liberty going into game 3? You are going to be at home. So like, how much does that play a factor into it?
It always matters, obviously. I think like, you don't make up 28 points with any one thing. So I, you know, there's a laundry list of things that need to go different for them. Like maybe the least insightful thing anyone's ever said. You have to do a lot of things different to make up 28 points. I think, you know, some of it is schematic. I think, you know, there's this whole, like, for example, you could go down the list, but I think the way they've guarded Kia Stokes, I would probably guard her a little bit differently. Obviously, when she doesn't have the ball, you probably should ignore her. I know she hit a couple threes yesterday. I would let her do that again. All due respect to Kia Stokes. When
it's
she has
all
the
Ari's
ball.
Because she did that video with the Aces before the game saying who was going to go off. And they said Kia.
Yeah. So. Well,
I mean,
there you go.
If we're going to blame someone. Sorry, Ari, I love you.
And Kia had 8 points, which for her is absolutely going off. So that was correct. I think when she has the ball, though, you have to pressure her. I think you have to be up because she's going to find people. She's going to either they're going to run people off handoffs and then you have no help there for Kelsey Plummer, whoever's coming off that handoff. Or she's just going to be able to easily find cutters, which Aces had a lot of because Liberty were getting beaten backdoor quite a bit. Kia Stokes had 3 assists.
Nearly on every possession, it felt like.
Yes, right, which is something else they need to clean up, obviously. But, you know, she hasn't had 3 assists all season, and she had 3 in game 1. She had more assists in this finals than she'd had whole playoffs before that. So, that, I mean, you can talk about schematics. You can also talk about effort and focus. Go back to game 1. I think the whole thing that summed up that second half for me was just that inbounds from Sabrina to Jonquel, where Jonquel wasn't looking. Kelsey Plum stole it, got a layup. Like, that can't happen in the finals. You can't, the Aces are a better team. And if they beat you, they beat you. But you can't have lackadaisical inbound passes to people who aren't looking and just like give the ball away like that. So that's, you know, another item on the list. And there's some variance here too. Like, you know, just randomness of shots going in or not. The Liberty are shooting terribly right now, and I don't know what it is. It's kind of sustained across the whole playoffs, to be honest. In particular, in this finals, like before this finals, there have been 2 times ever where a team took 29 plus threes and didn't make 10 of them, and the Liberty have done that 2 times in this final, the same amount that the rest of the league had done in history. So, at some point, your threes have to go in too. I think being at home will help with that, but there's just any one of those things isn't going to make the difference. You need everything to go right to get over the hump here.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the poor shooting is like kind of a mixture of a few things. One being, at least it's something that I noticed in the second half of game two, is that they were down by so much that they ended up just chucking threes everywhere. When I think they were much better off trying to figure out, you know, playing better together. Like, they would miss a three, they would get the offensive rebound, they would pass it to somebody else, and that person would chuck the three, and then they would miss that three, and they would get the offensive rebound, and then the third person would chuck the three. And I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, this is not, like, you had three chances to get the ball in the basket. You saw the shots weren't falling. I don't know if, like, shooting another three is a solution here. I get that, like, there's not a lot of time left, you're down by a lot, but at the same time, it's like, you have to figure out how to get back to what your players can actually do. Another factor is just like the Aces completely eliminating Sabrina Ionescu. Like, if she has not scored over 10 points, I think, in any of these first two games, which is, you know, another factor, she hit like a couple of, or like one or two like good threes in game two, but like other than that, not really. And then they're just kind of relying on Jonquel to be super strong in the paint, being triple teamed and just kind of letting her figure it out and not even really being able to create off of that. So I think there's a lot of things going on. I know there was like some debates about like Maureen Yohannes versus like Sloot versus Sabrina, like a lot of discussions about the backcourt for the Liberty. I think Sloot needs to be better at just like, because I think some of the offense falls apart a little bit with her on the floor, and I think she knows it. Like, I don't want to rant, like, go on her too hard. I think she knows it. You could tell like when she like went to sit out, when she got like subbed out for Maureen in game two, and she was like super frustrated. The camera was like following her, and Steph like Dolson was like trying to give her a high five, and Sue was like, no, like she was not having it. So I think this team knows that they need to be better. It's also just hard when you have a team like the Aces, like just on that passing front, when you said that like Sab is passing it to somebody who's not looking, like Chelsea Gray and like Asia Wilson are like the opposite of that, where it's just like they're so, so good at it that it doesn't matter how Chelsea passes it. Asia will always catch it. And I think that's such an underrated thing that people don't really realize, like just how good this Aces team is. Like, they are elite at doing stuff like that, because like, any other players, I think, or on a different team, if Chelsea Gray is passing the ball to you like that, I don't think a lot of players can catch it and finish the way that Asia does. And I think that's a very key thing of like why this Aces team feels to be on a different level right now, and something that I definitely noticed. And because they make it look so easy, it might just like blow past you a little bit sometime, like go over your head, but they are really, really good at doing all those little things. And it's just been really hard to stop them. Like, is this like the best team you have ever seen in your lifetime?
It might be. I think I'm going to need to see them finish it off before we officially give them that crown.
Can you imagine if we like have this whole podcast and then the Liberty go and they have like this like bounce back win in game three and they win by like 20 points and then we're like, okay, I don't know anything about basketball then.
Yeah, that's why I'm not giving him the official crown yet. At this moment, I would definitely lean towards yes, but we can't put the stamp on it until they close it out in terms of being the best team ever. But I do think, you know, you're always going to use that early Houston Comets dynasty as a measuring stick anytime you're talking about the best teams in this league. You know, we had this conversation with the 2019 Mystics. How do they stack up to the 90s Comets? Now we have this conversation with the Aces. It's hard to compare across eras, but I think they're better. And I think, you know, they go and close it out. I think they earn that title, best offense and best defense in the league this year. You don't see that very often, even without Candace Parker on the floor. Yeah. Obviously, they're dominating what is really another super team. I don't know if the Comets had anyone. I think maybe one year the Sparks were really good. Most years, I don't think they had anyone that is the level of these Liberty, as bad as they've looked this finals. They're, I think, better than most anyone the Comets played most of those seasons. So, yeah, I think yes. But like I said, I'm gonna hold off on making it official till they close out game three. We'll see. But
okay,
it's a stork for sure.
Fair. That's fair. Okay. Kind of the last thing that I do want to touch on in this final series before we move on to our player of the week. So I want to talk about Stewie a little bit, because I think her throughout the playoffs has been a very interesting case study. Obviously started off struggling a little bit. And now it feels like it's been better, but almost not good enough. And I don't really know what to do with it, because, you know, she did get MVP this year. She has looked like the MVP of the Liberty at times, but now you're in a situation where do you need her to actually take control of the game? Or is this more of a everybody has to figure it kind of thing? Like, what do the Liberty do from here? And like, what do you make of what Stewie needs to be for this Liberty team?
Yeah, well, no one's ever come back down 0-2 before. So if you're going to do something no one's ever done before, you need your MVP to go crazy. So yes, yeah, they absolutely need her stuff. And it's baffling to me, too, what we've seen from her in this playoffs. Outside of maybe a game or two against the Sun, she's been taken out. And scoring-wise, you could talk about her shots not going in. But there's other little moments, too. Like, yesterday, first couple minutes of the game, there was a long rebound and Stewie had inside position on this box out, and then like Asia just beat her to the ball. It was just a 50-50 rebound, and Asia just beat her to the offensive rebound, kicked it out. Kelsey Plum hit a three. Like, that's got to be Stewie's rebound. And there's just these little moments like that that just feel off, and I don't know what it is, like you said, but they're not gonna come back in this series if that continues with her. They, as dominant as JJ has been in the first halves of this series, which is something else we can talk about. You know, the Aces finally decided to switch and put Asia on her in the second half, have Kia Stokes on Brianna Stewart last night. And Stu, you know, Kia Stokes is a great defender. Don't get me wrong. She's not the defensive player of the year. She's not Asia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Stewie.
Well, she's the honorary defensive player of the year.
You're right. Asia will call her the defensive player of the year. The official league did not. She's mm-hmm. an excellent defender. But I think it's a step down when you go from having the best defender maybe ever, certainly right now in the world, on you, to having a very, very good defender on you, Akia Stokes. And when you're the MVP, you should be able to score more than 6 points on 30, whatever percent shooting with Kia Stokes on you. Again, mm-hmm. no shade to Kia Stokes. Most people would not. But Brianna Stewart is one of the few people in the world that should be able to do that against Kia Stokes. So, the Liberty are going to need to see more out of the backcourt, like you said, really, just across the board. But Brianna Stewart, it probably has to start with her when she's the face of this team.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And very last thing, Sandy needs to go back to wearing seafoam. Don't know what the red choice was with the pantsuit. Maybe she was trying to shake it up. She was like, maybe if I wear the Aces colors, it'll get in their head. No, Sandy, you need to go back to the seafoam. Please, we beg of you, especially at home. I don't really believe that has any effect on the game, but like, it never hurts to be safe. It might. Who knows? I don't know.
I gotta try something.
I gotta do like the stats of like when Sandy wears seafoam, how do the Liberty do? I just have to go back and watch every game for that, because that'd actually be an interesting stat. But yeah, I know it's tough for the Liberty right now. I would not want to be them, but maybe going home, playing at Barclays against a sold out crowd, like behind them rather than behind the other team, maybe that's gonna help light a fire. I think overall just need to see a lot more from a lot of the players, but yeah, Aces are up 2-0. We'll see what happens if it's a sweep, if we get a game four. I'm like being illuminated by YouTube, by the camera right now on my laptop, which is like weird. if you're watching on YouTube,
you're but, a star, yeah. You're shining, Cree.
I need the Liberty to shine. I need them to shine so we can get like a 4 or 5 game series to make. But no, it's all jokes aside. Like, I think it's really special to see what the Aces are doing. Like, as much as we did want, or I shouldn't say did, because it could potentially go to a 5 game series. But I think like these are two really historic performances by a historic team. And I think we should also just pause and like kind of realize what is happening in front of us, because this is some special basketball. It's like when everything is just going right, completely right. And you just have all these players whose skill sets just complement each other really well. And it's super cool to watch, which brings us to our player of the week, who may or may not be finals MVP. We'll talk about it. But Jackie Young is our player of the week. In game one, she scored 26 points. She had 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Game two, 24 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. She was the story of game one, honestly. And Cal, you called it on our pod, on our preview pod. You said she was going to be the X factor for this team. Not only is she the X factor, she is the factor. She's been really, really good. And, you know, you talked a lot about that Jackie on Sabrina matchup, and we're seeing it play out. So what do you think about our player of the week?
Yeah, she's been the A factor, the B factor, the Y factor, the Z factor. She's been everything. I don't think she just maybe could be considered for finals MVP. I think if I had a vote right now, if the series were only 2 games, she would get my vote. I would have her as the front runner right now. And I know there's this whole Asia Wilson hive out there, so this is not an anti-Asia take. Asia was phenomenal in game two. Asia was good in game one. I think Jackie was definitely better in game one and has been the story for 80 minutes on this team. So to me, it's her right now. We'll see what happens the rest of the series. Like, I love how she's just been able to, and really this is sort of the evolution of her game since she came into the league. And obviously playing for Bill Laimbeer is different than playing for Becky. She wasn't much of a 3-point shooter. I think she could, she just didn't, because that offense wasn't built for it. But you see how she's become so knocked down, and they started out giving her space early in game one, and that was a mistake from the start.
Big mistake.
She was punishing them. But when you don't give her space, I mean, we've seen her get to the hoop. I think she had 2 straight and ones early in the second half yesterday, if I remember correctly. Just, you can't stop her downhill either. So there's not a lot you can do. And the Liberty backcourt isn't built to guard a player like Jackie Young. Sabrina Ionescu certainly can't do it. So, you know, I love what she's been doing. It's not just scoring. You know, she's been scoring inside, outside, everyone on the court, taking what they give her defensively. But she's rebounding. Like you said, she's finding people. She's defending. She's doing everything. So she's been the best player on either team, I think, that in this series.
Yeah, that's a big thing too. Like, as much as she is, like, her scoring has really been explosive and a lot of variety too. But I think she's just so active in the rotations, and just like when she's on the floor with the others, with the other four, she's just so like crucial to the way that their whole flow. She's so so important to that. And I think she's also really good at like finding people. Like, that's another thing that this Aces team, like, they're all really good passers. Like, they're all really good at reading each other. And I think that's like a really big asset to her game too, that I've noticed. But she's been incredible to watch. Like, we talked about like how strong she's gotten this year, and we are seeing that in action. And also, like, when she starts to like show those emotions after, she's like, I know I'm her. She's like, I know it. That's when you know you're in danger. When one of the quietest players in the league starts like showing off and like talking her shit, like that's when you know that you just can't really do much against her. So yeah, I think right now she should definitely be considered for finals MVP. We'll see how game three goes, because I can also see a case where Asia could win it too. I think it's very close. But that also just speaks to how dominant each of these Aces players are. Because like, even Chelsea Gray, like we haven't really talked about her too much, but like, she's also been phenomenal. She literally started reverting back to that 2022 finals MVP type of shooting in game two. And I was watching her like right from the get-go. I was just like, if Chelsea's shooting like this, then this game is pretty much a wrap. Like, it's crazy. Like, the off-balance shots, like, it's such a beautiful shot. And when those start going in, along with her like incredible passing that everybody on that team can catch, it's just what do you do? And you just have so many of these players that are good at different things, but also just complement each other really well. And so, yeah, anyway, that was like a little tangent on Chelsea Gray, but Jackie Young is our player of the week, very much so deserved. And we'll see what happens in game three. I'm very, very intrigued for game three. Like, I really want to see what's going to happen. If it'll be closer, if the Liberty can take it. Do you have any, like, hot takes about what's going to happen in game three?
Well, first off, I just want to say back to Jackie Young really quick. Mm-hmm. One of the coolest things for me at being in the arena was seeing all the, you know, the Jumbotron stuff they do during timeouts and all that. Every arena is different. During halftime, they had like these calming, soothing meditation exercises with Jackie Young. I've never seen that in a basketball arena before. And really? Jackie Young was the first person, or the perfect person to do it. I think it was amazing. And then they went right from that into like all the pump up stuff, you know, like Get Loud, which was like the opposite vibe. Hilarious to me, but I loved it. It was so cool. Shout out to the Aces for doing that. And shout out to Jackie for helping us find our Zen and then getting us back into basketball. That was great. So she does it off the court too. I don't even remember what your actual question was now.
Hot takes for game three?
You know, I do think the Liberty are going to come out swinging. I don't know if they're going to win the game, but I think they're going to at least have a strong start. I don't see them getting down 19-2 again in this game. I think you're definitely going to see, you know, the energy and sort of the fire from, like you said, they know they have to play better. I think you're going to see that carry through at least early in the game, whether we see it for 40 minutes and if it's enough to get them over the top, who knows? But I don't know if that's even a hot take or not, but I definitely see them hanging around for a while at least.
Yeah, they definitely have some stuff to clean up. I think either a Sab or a Stewie, like, huge game is probably going to be something that they're hoping for. Which is part of why I'm like hoping that Barclays crowd kind of gets behind them, because maybe that could help. But yeah, we'll see what happens. Game three is on Sunday, October 8-15. Almost said 18. That was not the right date. But I think that's right, right? The 15th?
Yeah, I think game four is the 18th.
Yes.
If it happens.
If it happens.
Game three is the 15th. Yep.
If it happens. But yeah, that's been Coast to Coast. If you guys haven't caught the rest of Her Hoop Stats coverage this week, Gabe and Chrissy recorded their courtside podcast last night after game two, which props to them because I went straight to bed after game two. So make sure you guys go check out their recap and their talks on the Her Hoop Stats podcast network. And we'll see you next Wednesday.